Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Diana Gould on Blog Talk Radio. I have just written my first novel called Cold Water, and it is my great delight to be talking today with Naomi Hirahara, who is the author of a series of mysteries. Is it Mas Arai? How do you pronounce
Perfect.
His name, Naomi?
Perfect. The way I describe it is Mas is more in Spanish, and Arai for things go awry.
Oh,
but you
great.
Got it.
Okay. Mas Arai series, and I am delighted to be talking to Naomi because I know her to be not only a very good writer but also a very kind person. And so, Naomi, I wanted to ask you at first, when you first wrote the first Mas Arai book, did you have any idea that it was going to be a series?
I had no idea. The first book took me 15 years in terms of idea to publication.
Mm-hmm.
And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, boy, it would be nice, you know, become attached to some of these characters, be nice to visit them sometime. Not necessarily mm-hmm. the following year, as was the contract stipulated. And suddenly mm-hmm. I was writing this series.
And so when you introduced those characters like Tug and Harao, and you didn't think of them as recurring characters, did that come to you as you were writing the second book?
It's kind of like the J.D. Salinger's, like Franny, Zoe, and, you know, it was like how he had created this world, and then maybe he'll return in a short story or return in a,
right.
you know, but it wasn't consecutive. So
right.
I think I wasn't necessarily thinking, yeah, the next book, but what Random House bought the Summer of the Big Bocce, my first book, and
mm-hmm.
you know, in the contract it was like, okay, the second book will be due the following year.
God.
So you know, and the first book took me 15 years, second
uh-huh.
book, and I was already committed to some nonfiction projects, so suddenly I had to, you know, deliver something in like 9 months, so it was a bit daunting. But the great thing was that I had the main character and I had this world. So
right.
That definitely helped. But I didn't have this huge, at that time, I didn't have a character arc. You know, I didn't have a series arc. You know, I didn't
mm-hmm.
have any of those things. So I kind of developed it as I went along.
Well, how did you do that? You must have been so scared to have a 9-month deadline for a second book, that when the first one had taken you 15 years, how did you adjust what you were doing to meet that deadline?
I was incredibly frightened.
Yes.
But I was up for the challenge because I wanted my first book to get published, so that was the big incentive
right.
to take on the challenge. And I, you know, my first book, there's echoes of Hiroshima, there's flashbacks to Hiroshima. My character's an atomic bomb survivor, so how do I follow up, you know, this watershed event that happened in the 20th century, you know?
Right.
And I decided, you know what, I'm going to go small. I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to do more of a domestic Agatha Christie-type mystery with and delve into my main character's relationship with his estranged daughter in New York City. And I just moved it geographically, too, which
mm-hmm.
for some series is a no-no. You know,
mm-hmm.
they keep it, you know, maybe the fifth book you could put it in another location, but I immediately moved it to New York City. It since has returned to the West Coast, but...
Mm-hmm.
But I think also I wanted to develop, what I was looking at was not only L.A., but also looking at a subculture, the Japanese-American community. So I wanted the freedom to kind of move it around.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what I loved about your second book was part of that continent series, although I would love to read all of them because I've enjoyed the first two so much. But what I enjoyed about it particularly was that the story is taking place on several layers or levels at once, and you are telling a story about a father and a daughter. And really, Moss is much more, I wouldn't say humanized, but he, you know, he's so gruff and self-contained. And by his actions in the book, I think he himself comes to realize, and certainly the reader comes to realize, how important his family is and how much he loves his daughter and his grandchild. So you're telling that story in addition to the murder mystery, which is something that I never want a murder mystery to be just about the murder mystery, because who cares? You know, I'm always trying to tell, always. I mean, I've written one book. But I'm always interested in telling more than the superficial story, more than the murder mystery story.
Well, you know, when I read Coldwater, your book, it's kind of I saw some similarities in what you were doing in your first book to what I was mm-hmm. doing in Summer of the Big Bocce, in that we are kind of dealing with not completely unreliable narrators, but narrators who had gone through something horrific, mm-hmm. and their memories, I mean, in the case of Brett, you know, she has substance abuse issues, so she mm-hmm. hasn't remembered certain things. And I think right. with Moss, he has, like, in a way, post-traumatic stress, you know, so there's certain right. things he has shoved into the recesses of his brain, and in order to solve the mystery, he has to kind of draw it out. So
right.
I think
right.
it was kind of interesting. It's like, oh, we're kind of, in a weird way, even though our characters are so different, there's some commonalities, I think, that we were striving to do.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because when I first met you, I think I said something to you like that and I hadn't even read your books at that time. I just knew about them, and I said, I think we're kindred spirits in a way. I think we are trying to do something similar in our books because, aside from the fact it took you 10 years, took me 10 years to write the first one, and I, too, am trying to write the second one in a year. Just saying that threw me off track. I get so scared. I forgot what I was starting to say.
Well, I kind of think of it as like running, like, you know, it's you're running to training for the first, to finish that first book, and it takes a whole lot of time to do that. But I think once you've done it and you, it's kind of like, this is a weird analogy, but baking a cake, it's like you got the chemistry down of the baking powder or whatever. You kind of know how it's supposed to happen.
Mm.
And
mm-hmm.
then since, are you going to stay with Brett as your main character? Or
yes,
are you doing,
I am.
So you know your main character, you know.
Right.
I think for me, I mean, the challenge is because with me, Moss, he had an awakening, right, in the first book, a call to action. And,
right.
And so there's that excitement of our characters, our flawed characters, like finally standing up and doing something. But then
mm-hmm.
it's like the second, okay, you know, they're not necessarily law enforcement. They're not detectives. So
right.
what gets them hooked into the next mystery? So that, I think that's like the biggest challenge of book two.
Right. And a character that doesn't have a job like policeman or detective or and even if they're a detective, because my character is, you know, she, in a chapter that was left out of the first book, she in the period of time before she, well, I can't say, I don't want to say that, because I don't want to give too much away about the first book. But anyway, even if the character is working as a private detective, you still need a, I think, a compelling reason other than doing your job to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why get involved? Yeah.
Yeah, and that is the trick. But if you do it, then you also, you know, can take your reader along with you. I mean, I think of the murder mystery in Coldwater as the analogy I've heard, which I really appreciate. It's like the piece of raw meat that the burglar throws to the dog to keep it busy while you're robbing the house. You know, and I think people keep turning the pages because they want to know what happened to the murder mystery, but there's really an underlying story going on at the same time. But if that was all that the book was about, it wouldn't be as interesting.
I just loved all your insider knowledge of, you know, Hollywood and the. It's interesting because, like, in our first books, we both covered L.A., Southern California, but I think they might as well have been a different country because I think we're dealing with different aspects of Los Angeles.
Right.
And I'm East Side girl. I live in Pasadena, and you probably in your adult life has been on more the West Side, right? West of.
Yes.
Of downtown, and that's more where the whole show business is centered. So
right.
It was really delicious and really, I think everybody wants to know what's really happening, you know, in these TV shows. And I know, you know, you're writing fiction, but you've worked in the industry. So Diana, how much of that was inspired by true experiences, or was it just more, you could reply to.
Well, I did work in the entertainment business for 30 years, and I observed a lot, and, you know, as I said, I think I'm one of those panels, at Left Coast Crime, I got to work out a lot of resentment in this book. But it wasn't about any one particular person. It was more, you know, I took a look here or an outfit there or, you know, something that somebody had said. I mean, that's what I appreciate, or what I was going to say, what I love about being a writer, but I couldn't. I was so surprised to hear myself say that, because I think of writing as being particularly difficult. But anyway, I do love that aspect of being a writer, of just being able to take things that you've seen and heard and put it in a book, and nobody, you know, it's almost like stealing. You know, it feels a little bit like stealing, because you're just. You know, you're just taking what you need from things around you. So, yeah, I mean, I have a good ear, I guess. I listen to people talk. No, it's completely fictional. The book is completely fictional. I like to say that it's completely autobiographical, except nothing in it ever happened to me.
We tell lies to tell the truth.
Yeah, exactly. And I identify with the character, and I I certainly identify with the arc that she goes through in the book. But if I actually wrote about my own life, it would be so boring. But I also appreciated in your book the setting and the, it is like another world. And also, you know, the world of Japanese gardeners, it's so interesting. And I realized that, you know, I used to have a Japanese gardener, and then it was replaced by Mexican gardeners. I think that's, you know, something you refer to in the book. And the whole world of Altadena, and, you know, it's another world. And I also, and the... I mean, you really, I know less about the Japanese American community than you probably know about show business, but it wasn't a barrier at all. It was an entryway, and you made it very interesting and kind of, you know, it opens your eyes to stuff that you see all around you, but you just never really think about.
Thanks, Diana. That really makes me feel good. I mean, I worked for a Japanese American newspaper for, well, a total of 10 years, but 6 years I was the editor. And it's still in business, and believe it or not, in this age where newspapers are going away, it's been operational since, I think it's 1903, so it's very old. That's actually, you know, I can't write about these things just because I'm Japanese American. I've had to do research, and I think my years at the paper introduced me to all these different communities in Southern California, like the South Bay, Gardena, where there's, you know, if you want good, and Torrance, if you want a good Japanese food, you go down there, or the Sawtelle area, the West Side.
Right.
And just all these various communities of people from very different socioeconomic statuses. Oh, South Central, Boer Heights. So I think that I was like steeped into the community, and I think at the time people were saying, Naomi, why are you working for this kind of newspaper? Go to the LA Times. Do something more mainstream, which made sense, but, you know, I just thought these people, you know, were so fascinating, and every time I lifted a different layer, there was something else that I didn't know, and so it was just a wonderful experience, and I do nonfiction as well. I do a lot of history, but I think the beauty of novel writing is, like, you probably wouldn't have picked up a nonfiction book, you know, about Japanese American gardeners, let's say.
Right.
You know, but if it's if the container is a mystery, it's like, oh, let me pick up this mystery. And then you get involved with the characters, and it's, I think, an easier way for, quote, outsiders, or, you know, it's easier for people to enter in.
Right.
To something.
Right.
So I love the genre. I love the readers. I think mystery readers are so curious about new worlds. So it's a wonderful place to be in as a writer.
Yeah, I'm starting to see that readers of mysteries are first of all, they really read, and they love reading, and they seem to have the relationship to writers that, I mean, when I was a kid and I used to read, and I used to love reading, and I just, you know, I wanted to know the writers, and I wanted to know all about the writers, and there's kind of a communication between reader and writer that I see in this community that I haven't seen before, or I haven't seen in such a benign and, wholesome and wholehearted way.
Well, I think it's the way, you know, mystery readers have voracious appetites. So
yes.
After they read, like, a Diana Gold, okay, I like her. What's like, you know, what's similar to Cold Water? I want to read another book like this, you know.
Right.
So, so there's room, you know, on the shelf for more people. But I think you do need to have a distinctive voice. It can't be, you know, more exactly of the same. You know, you have to bring your own voice to it, or else, you know, it's going to get repetitious, or it's not going to excite who we're trying to write for. I mean,
okay,
I'd like to ask you, Diana, because, you know, your character's not clean cut, right? I mean, in your back of your mind, and I won't say exactly what happens in the first chapter, but, you know, did you have to rework that to try to make her more sympathetic, or what were some of your challenges? Why did it take you so long to finish the book?
Yes, well, I wanted to ask you the same question, but anyway, It took me so long. One of the reasons it took me so long to finish the book is that it had a hard, very hard time getting published. And I think what happened to the main character in the first chapter is part of the reason that it had difficulty, because, you know, my character does something unforgivable in the first chapter, and the whole book is about finding forgiveness, you know, for the unforgivable. And I didn't want to soften that. And I didn't want to cheat it, because I think that many of us do have things about ourselves that we're very ashamed of, we've done that we wish we hadn't, or aspect of ourselves that, you know, I really wanted to write about somebody who had a lot of self-hatred, and how a character can go from that point to coming to a point of self-acceptance and self-forgiveness. And I think that, you know, I'm not the only person who dealt with issues of not having a very high opinion of myself and needing, in order to grow up and be an adult, to come to terms with things about myself that I used to wish were different. So that is the story I wanted to tell. Part of the reason it took me 10 years to write the book was that, coming from a background in screenwriting, which I think was a tremendous asset in many ways, I think the thing that I hear most often about this book is that once I started reading it, I couldn't put it down, and I had to finish it. And I think that my experience writing shows like Dynasty and Knots Landing, where you really have to plot for bringing people back after the commercial break and with a week intervening. And these, you know, I was writing in the 80s, these nighttime soaps where they were the first time continuing storylines. And so I learned to plot that way. So that was an asset. But as a screenwriter, there's a lot that you don't have to do. You pretty much only have to do the story and the dialogue, and somebody else decides what they're wearing and what the weather looks like and how to shoot it. And so my first drafts were much more superficial, and I had to learn to do in fiction and prose everything that the cinematographer did, or the set decorator, or the costume designer, or the actor. You have to do all of that in prose, and that took me many drafts to be able to do. And that was part of the reason it took so long. And also it took so long because it did have a very bumpy road to publication. It landed in New York in 2008 in September, just as Lehman Brothers collapsed and the banks were nationalized and the stock market crashed. And everyone in New York was just in shock, and nobody was interested in cultivating and developing a new writer, which I needed at the time. So, I just put this book aside, was heartbroken, really, that it didn't find a publisher at first, but then, you know, went on and did other things in my life, and as a result, I think the other things I did in my life, which I thought were a substitute, it turns out that was what I needed to give me the perspective, so that when I did the final draft, it's a much better book. And it did find publication, and I ended up being grateful that it wasn't published sooner, because this is a better book.
The Phoenix Rising from the Ashes.
absolutely. You know, and I like to tell that, you know, when I'm speaking to audiences or readers, because it's just an example to me, both, never give up. If there's something you really want to do, keep at it. And also, that very often what seems like the worst thing that could happen turns out to be a much better thing than you could have imagined. But what took you 15 years, and how did you learn to short-circuit that? Oh, well, and I also answer that, but there's one thing I do want to ask you before we go that I really want to ask you, but answer that.
When I first started the book in my 20s, so I think it was an ambitious book to try at that age. My protagonist, in the first book, he's in his 60s, his late 60s, and he ages a bit throughout the series. And he's male, you know, and I'm female.
Mm-hmm.
It was in a character inspired by my father, so, you know, it was there was a familiarity there, and I, you know, I interviewed a lot of men of that particular generation through my work at the newspaper. But still, you know, you're inhabiting a person who's very different than who you are, who I was. So, so that, of course, was a challenge. I was first writing more of a literary, quote, literary book, without a murder. And it was told in the voice of two men. One was Moss, my main character, and one was a young doctor from Hiroshima who had come to participate in these atomic bomb medical examinations that actually do happen every other year. So, but there wasn't, Moss was, you know, passive character, and there just wasn't enough conflict. There wasn't enough oomph, you know, to get people like the agents or the small presses that I was sending the manuscript to actually bite into, you know. So it's like, okay, but I was determined that I really wanted to tell Moss's story. I even participated in a writing fellowship in Kansas for this LA person to go to Wichita, Kansas for 9 months, and just really, you know, dedicated to the story. And then it was only that I returned back from the fellowship. I had already rewritten the book, but then I came back to LA, and then I decided that I had this clue that would kind of change the whole book and into more of a murder mystery. And also, one of my writing mentors said, you know, Naomi, Moss is a more interesting character than this young doctor. So I had to do some surgery and remove all the chapters with the doctor and reform it. It's weird. It was very strange. Like, I didn't get that discouraged, which was really really strange. But I think, you know, my goal wasn't to become rich or famous. It was just like I was dedicated to the story, you know, of Moss. And I would just do whatever it, I mean, it could seem very foolish to most people, but that's just where I was at. And I think because I did all that work, you know, Diana, you might feel find this true when you tackle your second book, because you had done all that work, you know, to create your first. I think some of that could apply to your next book, too. You know, because we had to dig super deep to get it out. So,
Well, what I really want to ask you, I love to ask writers this, is, you know, how much do you write every day, and what, you know, when do you start, and how long do you write, and what's your process, and how many, you know, how do you know when you're done, and do you have an outline, and do you rewrite, and all that kind of question?
It's varied from book to book. I've also written about 6 nonfiction books. So, actually, as I was trying to finish Summer of the Big Bocce, the first book, it turned, you know, I think I had completed and published at least 1 or 2 nonfiction books in that time period. And I think nonfiction helped me a lot in that when you're writing like a biography or person, you kind of know, I mean, you're interviewing them, and so you're getting the, you know, details of their life. So you kind of know what you're working with. And then from there, you figure out what is the theme of this person's life, and then you figure out how to organize it. You know, so I think when I tackled the first book, I started interviewing Moss, you know, as if he was a real person. And I think some of that technique kind of helped I'm going to be teaching a mystery writing class this summer. I'm more of an intuitive writer. You know, I didn't major in English. I was majored in international relations. And I'm kind of self-taught in that way. So, and journalism is the same way. I wasn't a communications major. I just got a job at the newspaper, and I just learned while I was there. But one thing I think I'm going to be talking about to my students is kind of this braiding effect. I realize what I do is I braid, and one braid is like the character's arc. And in my books, the character changes a little, you know. It's not a total static character. And then the other, then I have a braid for, one of the braids has to be misdirection, you know. I think that's the key in the type of books I write, because there's a puzzle element to it. So I got to lead people kind of the wrong direction. So one thread is the misdirection and the other thread is the, you know, what really happened. I mean, in terms of what led to the murder of somebody. But many times when I'm doing that, I'm not quite sure which one of those, which is a misdirection and which is not, you know.
Right.
I think
right.
they have to be equally important as I pull it through the story. So I'm going to be talking a little more about that technique. I don't write necessarily every day. When I'm on deadline, I do, you know. My butt is in the chair and I won't leave it. But usually I'm working on multiple projects at one time. I mean, throughout the year, I'm working on a lot of different projects. So I just organize it by day. Since I worked at the paper, I don't really get writer's block. You know, I don't get that. I work on a 10-year-old laptop, which I think I need to replace. And usually, though, when I do a new project, this is the weird thing, because I'm kind of this, I look for a journal that kind of fits the project, you know. The cover of it has to kind of, you know, symbolize that particular book that I'm about to write. And I usually just start handwriting notes of different possible strings, you know, in this braid that I'm going to create. And then I just, it's like free-flowing. And occasionally I even do it on the computer, but it depends. And then from there, usually something tangible emerges that I could really sink my teeth into. And then after I do that stage, I start, you know, it's kind of like the contractors come out to start building the house, you know. So then I start to build the house.
And do you do that on the computer or also by hand?
I do it both. And I'm constantly, when I'm really building, I'm constantly thinking about it. My husband and I, we love sports. So, you know, I could be at a basketball game and then I'll have a little notebook and something will occur to me. And I'll just, you know, write it down. So even though I'm not in that chair typing, I guess I do write. But it may not involve pen and paper. I mean, it might not involve sitting at the computer. You know, it could be writing on a napkin, you know. How about yourself? Do you utilize the index cards for that are used for screenwriting?
No. You know, I don't have a mind that really works well with organization. And anything I try to do that's organized gets disorganized very quickly. But I do need to write every day, and I do need to kind of show up at the same time every day. And I do need to write first thing in the morning. I don't like to do too many things before I write, because writing is a struggle, and I like to have the rest of my day free. You know, I write for a couple of hours, and depending on where I am in the project, I mean, sometimes in the beginning, you know, I can just write for very short periods of time because I just don't know very much. And, you know, a lot of it is just taking notes and making notes. And with Coldwater, I had so many storylines going. I think I counted, had like 5 or 6 storylines going at the same time. And but that, again, it came from my experience in television, where we always had an A story and a B story and a C story and a runner. I don't know, Naomi. I know that, you know, I tried not to be a writer. I've tried a couple of times in my life not to be a writer and to do something else instead. And I couldn't do it. I just have to do this. But I appreciate it and I'm grateful for it, but it's not easy. And the process itself I find very difficult, because I am so, you know, I like to know things, and it makes me uncomfortable not to know, you know, to not know something. And there's so much I don't know, you know, in the beginning part of formulating a book. You know, I have to learn patience with that process. Anyway, yeah. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful talking to you.
It's been great talking to you, too.
And so is there anything? I'm sorry I interrupted you. Were you something you were going to say?
Oh, I'm just saying it was great to talk to you, too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was wonderful talking to you, too, Naomi, and I look forward to other conversations in whatever venue they come up.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for listening, whoever's listening.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll say goodbye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
On a debris at the Sunday morning market, you were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working. left you on the debris. Now we both know you